Good morning again. This is an early Wallace Stevens poem, if it matters. Tea at the Palace of Hoon. Not less, because in purple I descended the western day through what you called the loneliest air, not less was I myself. What was the ointment sprinkled on my beard? What were the hymns buzzed beside my ears? What was the sea whose tide swept through me there? Out of my mind the golden ointment rained, and my ears made the blowing hymns they heard. I was myself the compass of that sea. I was the world in which I walked, and what I saw, or heard, or felt came not but from myself. And there I found myself more truly and more strange. I'll read it one more time. Tea at the Palace of Hoon. Not less because in purple I descended the western day through what you called the loneliest air, not less was I myself. What was the ointment sprinkled on my beard? What were the hymns buzzed beside my ears? What was the sea whose tide swept through me there? Out of my mind the golden ointment rained, and my ears made the blowing hymns they heard. I was myself the compass of that sea. I was the world in which I walked, and what I saw or heard or felt came not but from myself. And there I found myself more truly and more strange. Part of me feels like I don't want to say anything. But I think who knows what he had in mind. I was reading some commentary and I thought, gee, I kind of don't recognize that. So Novella said that my video is going in and out, but that's not my experience. I don't know if it's anybody else's. Novella, if you do chat to everybody, then they'll be able to respond to you, but I don't think it's on my end.
I'm seeing you just fine. It's not even here.
Okay, so, it's just me. It's just my feed. Got it.
Yeah, especially if you're on a phone.
Yeah.
Not less, because in purple I descended the western day. Was I myself? Because in purple I descended. I could imagine a royal being descending some stairs in a purple robe, you know, purple... dye was very, very expensive, so that's one of the reasons it's a color of royalty. So, Hoon is descending the stairs wrapped in purple, I think. And it descended the western day at sunset. Right? Through what you called the loneliest air. I don't know who the you is there. And I don't know that he's disputing that. You know, there are interpretations that he's sort of arguing with Schopenhauer or something. I don't know. He might be talking about something a lover said to him once, or his wife said. That the end, that kind of twilight end of the day is the loneliest air. that's what it feels like to me. That there may be a particular you, or this may be what somebody once called it, and he's acknowledging it. At any rate, it doesn't make that much difference. Not less because in purple I descended, not less was I myself. Even though I was protected by royal robes, I was still myself. And you can understand our practice in this way, in the sense that we're often we muffle ourselves in our ideas and our views and our fears and our longings. But you're still there. You're still there. Going through the day, going through your life. And you have to do it yourself. And there's a way in which it's very lonely. Nobody can do it for you. And you can have company along the way, but you still have to do it yourself. Not less was I myself. What was the ointment sprinkled on my beard? What were the hymns buzzed beside my ears? What was the sea whose tide swept through me there? So these ointment and hymns, again, images of royalty, right? Or even a godlike being. He was anointed. And the sea whose tides swept through me there. You know, we're mostly salt water. And I'm not sure. I don't know exactly what he means by it, and it's a wonderful image, and I don't care. So there. What was the sea whose tide swept through me there? Out of my mind the golden ointment rained, and my ears made the blowing hymns they heard. I was myself the compass of that sea. I make my reality. I am responsible for my reality. And I anoint myself. I sing myself. And if you don't hear Walt Whitman in there, I don't know. I don't know. I hear Walt Whitman. Or maybe, yeah, Walt Whitman was certainly before Wallace Stevens. Wallace Stevens was born in the, 1879, something like that. Maybe later, but certainly in the 1800s. Out of my mind the golden ointment rained, and my ears made the blowing hymns they heard. I was myself the compass of that sea. I produce my own reality. And And I was myself the compass of that sea. A compass can be understood lots of ways. You could say, as in the sense of a short way of saying, I encompass it. I contain it, I surround it. But also a compass is telling you direction, and it's sort of, it's in the middle and sweeping out from there. But again, it's an image of being in the middle and sort of, and being in charge of it, I guess. That's a sort of a gross way of saying it. I was myself the compass of that sea. I was the world in which I walked. I was the world in which I walked, and what I saw or heard or felt came not but from myself. And there I found myself more truly and more strange. I was the world in which I walked, and what I saw, heard, felt came from me. We experience the world through our own filters. It's out there, and it's in here. And what we see is always filtered through our own experience. And we're always in charge of how we respond. But maybe it doesn't feel like being in charge of it a lot of the time. But, and we are, and even if we lose control, we're ultimately responsible for that. We're going to be creating karmic consequences. And there I found myself more truly and more strange. Because we're who we are, with all of our wounds and scars and joys, and you name it. We are karmic beings, the result of innumerable choices made by innumerable beings of all kinds. And we contain it, we're intimate with it. My reality is intimately and completely mine. And it's unknowable. And completely not mine. It's ours. And it just is. And that's why we should just go have a cup of tea. I think, I don't know, I could talk some more, but I'd rather not. Do you want me to read it one more time? Tea at the Palace of Hoon. Palace is P-A-L-A-Z. And Norman told me he thinks that Stevens was just fooling around. And Hoon is pretty weird, too. It's a name that he made up. But he does refer to Hoon other times as a person. So it's Hoon's Palace. Anyway, not less because in purple I descended the western day through what you called the loneliest air, Not less was I myself. What was the ointment sprinkled on my beard? What were the hymns buzzed beside my ears? What was the sea whose tide swept through me there? Out of my mind the golden ointment rained, and my ears made the blowing hymns they heard. I was myself the compass of that sea. I was the world in which I walked, and what I saw or heard or felt came not but from myself. And there I found myself more truly and more strange. Nothing? Kelly?
I wasn't sure if you were asking for comments at that point or if we were just having a moment of silence. The thing that struck me that you said was, you first said, we are responsible for our own experience. And then you said, we are responsible for our own reaction. And I believe you in both of those cases. But what I find really interesting is that I can take in, I can sort of internalize this idea of being responsible for my own reactions. And yet my mind kicks back on the idea of being responsible for my own experience. You know what I mean? It's like, well, no, there's all these things that happen to me. And I understand the idea sort of, but it's interesting that my body would say, yes, I do feel responsible for my own reactions, but I don't want to feel responsible for my own experience. And that was just the thing that struck me.
Yeah. Well, and you are and you aren't, right? Because you are the recipient of infinite causes and conditions. But if I understand Vasubandhu correctly, for whatever reason, your attention is drawn to something, a duck, and your eye sees it, and then there's this thing called manas, the discriminator, that goes, and this is a very simplistic description, but goes down into your storehouse where all the seeds of all the karmic, I guess you could say, experiences you've ever had, including your sort of your genetic makeup or whatever, and including what you've absorbed from your culture. And it roots around and it picks out they're just little seeds, they're called bija, that roots around and it picks out seeds that apply, your seeds that apply to duck. And so that's your duck that you're seeing. You're always seeing through the filter of your experience. You're making the duck. And our effort needs to be to not hold on to our idea of duck too much, too hard. Because you can only see your idea of duck. And, your eye may have a direct contact with, I don't know what, a mallard. But you see it through your filter. You know it, you cognize it through your filter. And whatever your ideas of duck are, which might be comfy, or I got chased by a goose when I was about 4 years old, and it was terrifying because the goose was almost as big as I was. And I know that's not a duck, but, whatever. So you have... that's not a conscious event. And still, it's yours, and you are creating your reality.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting. I see what you're saying, and I like it. It is. Well, like there's a part of me, I guess there's a part maybe of all of us where we just don't want to be responsible for that happens. But it's interesting because, yeah, if we take this idea of duck and, you know, the way that I've sort of formulated that cognition of duck, you know, there's probably not much I can do as far as not forming that cognition and making it a purely objective duck. But it's probably helpful if I at least acknowledge that it's not an objective duck.
That's right. Well, that's what, you know, one of the ways I mean it when I say, you know, with the mind of emptiness, or as Alan's bumper strip says, don't believe everything you think.
Yeah.
You know, or as Vasubandhu, or maybe it's Reb's interpretation, you know, just abide in pure concept. In other words, don't make it, don't concretize it, don't reify it. Don't kill it, which is what we do. Lisa, and then Zach, I think.
I guess I have just a question then. Is it possible to have a direct experience?
Yes. And I don't think that it's possible to cognize that. Mm-hmm. You know, you have it and it triggers something. Mm-hmm. And then you can point back to it. But as soon as you know it in the usual sense, you're separating from it. You're labeling it. So you have it, but you don't know you have it until after you have it. And that could be, you know, instantaneous. And you can have an awareness during it, but you're always you're always a moment late, I think. So it's something like that. So you know, we were talking about this once years ago at Tassajara, and my friend Barbara said to Reb, "So is that why they call it the hazy moon of enlightenment?" And he said, "Yes." So I think it's useful to not, you know, not worry about it too much, because there's just nothing you can do about it, and. I found myself more truly and more strange.
I was just going to say that reminds me of the last line. Okay. That, yeah.
Yeah, and anyway. So, Zach, I didn't know if you were signaling you wanted to say something or if you were bowing to somebody else. I couldn't quite tell, but if you'd like to say something, please do.
Okay, I'll say something. First, I wanted to say to Kelly that as you get older and maybe wiser, you realize all the mishigas you make yourself, that it's harder to blame because you realize I'm the chef of this stew, and I think maybe being older, you see it better or something. But I wanted to say that maybe because we're hearing this poem in a temple, a Zen temple of sorts, I kind of heard the beginning part where he's wondering about, you know, where that ocean went through, or how did that ocean go through him, and these things that were happening to him. And then later he realized that it was he doing it. It was kind of like the beginning was emptiness, and then it was more concrete and more relative. Mm-hmm. Is that like a ridiculous thought?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. It's...
Like, does it say who put the ointment on his...
He said, what was the ointment sprinkled on my beard? And then out of my mind, the golden ointment rained in the next paragraph, the next stanza.
So I kind of got that cosmic emptiness. It's all connected. And then how do I sort of walk around on Earth?
Mm-hmm. And then the last one. Put some, you know, I found myself more truly and more strange. I was completely this being in the relative world in this place and more strange because that's not true at all. Or it's, they're both true, of course.
Maybe he was living in the relative world with the mind of emptiness.
Exactly. Did you hear Whitman in this before I said it?
As soon as you said, I sing myself, I did, but... That was kind of a dead giveaway.
Yeah, that was, yes. It's not in the poem.
Same. So, I didn't hear Whitman until you mentioned it, and then I did. I couldn't get Whitman out of my mind after you said it. I had a strange response to this. First of all, I kind of felt, I felt a little bit sickened by all the royal imagery, and then I realized there was sadness underneath that. When, as I try to process what that is, quite a bit of sadness, which seemed out of proportion to the poem, but as I process it, I think it's that it feels like having a sense of being true, a sense of accepting the strangeness of the world, a sense of royalty seems so foreign to me. Like, to put it in, like, to kind of, I don't know, I guess to put it in the context of the Lotus Sutra, like I'm crying that I'll never be a Buddha, it just feels hard. It feels like a hard poem to me. I don't know. I don't think about becoming a Buddha. I don't think about being royal. These things aren't on my mind consciously, but I guess it brings up how much I cling, how much I want to.
Well, we were talking about being a bodhisattva. And also about this notion of Buddha nature. You have it, or you are it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, for us, that's in there. I don't know what he, you know, he had some familiarity with Buddhism. But I doubt that he was thinking about Buddha nature. But that notion that you are predicted, you will be Buddha. And I really like that, not less because in purple I descended. In other words, the fact that I descended as wrapped in royalty did not make me less myself. I still have to get to be myself, but not more either. I mean, he doesn't say that, but it seems implicit to me. Not less, because in purple I descended, was I myself.
guess the first, my first response was to imagine all of my neuroses while still wrapped in kingly garb. My second response was to say that no matter how much I felt I was out of my neuroses, however royal I felt I was, there's still something deeper, which is, or he says not less, so greater, to put it in those terms, greater, which is myself. And I am tempted to say I'm using the capital myself because I'm thinking of the Bodhisattva vow and becoming Buddha. And the gulf between all those things just swirled around. And I guess that's where the sadness comes from.
Oh, and there is, you know, I descended the Western day. It's kind of a sad, you know, there's a fading, the sunlight is going. And I was in purple, and you think of purple sunsets through what you called the loneliest air. And I don't think, I really don't think that he's arguing about it being the loneliest air.
Also, lonely.
I don't know what Bloom says.
I'm sorry. I know this isn't just me, my talk here, but it's.
All right, you can all unmute yourselves and just jump in. You know, yeah. there's only five of us here. Go on.
Just say the loneliest era has more than one meaning. I feel like there's a sadness, but there's also you don't see anyone else. You just see the king. You just see him, the author. So that. Lonely is the head that wears the crown has more than one meaning. It's like there's only one person who does this job who is this person. So, I agree he's not arguing.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I've been thinking, you know, that you're totally yourself, and that is a lonely thing. Nobody, as I said, nobody can do it for you. Nobody can die for you. Nobody could get born for you. Nobody can live your life. Much as, you know, we all try to live each other's lives, tell each other what to do. Still, you're it. And that's, you're it with a small I, and that can be very lonely, and you're with a capital I, and there's nothing but connection. But, or and, I'm not sure, that becomes, there's a kind of loneliness to that, because it implies no me. And then what? Strange. Anything else? If you want this, if you Google tea at the Palace of Hoon, this will come up. And what's his name?
Wallace Stevens?
No, Bloom. It's a Wallace Stevens poem. No, there's a scholar, and he's famous, and I'm trying to think of his first name, but anyway, there's a video of him reading it, but you get a very different feel from how he reads it. He says, descended the western sky day through what you called the loneliest air. So he sounds like a New Yorker. Anyway, this poem is often including by me, talked about at the same time as or with The Snowman. Another Wallace Stevens poem, which is, in some sense, when you talk about it, usually it's like the snowman is emptiness, and this is the relative world. The snowman ends, beheld. Nothing that was not there, and the nothing that is. Well, it must have been cold a long time. Anyway, never mind. It's a wonderful poem, but I don't. There's not time to do two of these at one time. But if you start Googling around, read also the snowman. So I think this is a good time to stop. Yes. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them.